I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, welcome to In the Pink, sponsored by Bose. Stay home, stay healthy, stay connected.
Okay, so I feel like the big break for you was when you got the call up from Red Bull Racing sort of back in 2007. How much of a surprise was that, or how elated were you? Just cast your mind back to that moment when you got the call.
Well, actually, the end of 2006. So for 2006, I'd gone back to Asia to race. I'd run out of money, basically, to race in Europe. And Renault started up a new championship out in Asia. I got a deal to go out there. So I raced out there and won the championship. But at the end of it, I had no money to come back. And I thought at that point, that's it. My driving days are done. I'd actually spoken to a friend of mine who runs a Formula 3 team in the UK about getting a job as their team manager and just working for him on the race team. And I'd sort of mentally started accepting that it might have been the end of the road. But I'd come to see Bernie in September of that year. And we talked about him helping me to get a GP2 deal for the following season. And anyway, the winter came, December came and went, Christmas came and went, January. And, you're sort of sitting on the internet in India, just seeing the entire grid filling up, thinking, yeah, it's not happening. And it was quite uncharacteristic of Bernie not to call back and not to return calls and stuff, because otherwise he was normally very good to us.
And just to interrupt really quickly, am I right in saying that he is your godfather?
No, it's a rumor that Natalie Pinkham has spread across the paddock, and about 16 people have come and asked me this, saying, oh, Nat's told me this. So somewhere you've woken up on the wrong side of the bed, dreamt this up, and then told the whole paddock.
I love this rumor. I think he should.
Well, you started it, so yeah, I'm sure you do.
But I heard this years ago.
From your subconscious.
Listen, I hear these stories about people adopting people in later life as their godchildren. So maybe we can put a bit of pressure on Bernie to do that now. Anyway.
To do it now. Yeah, that might work. Yeah, maybe.
As you were.
Basically, eventually the phone rang at the end of January. And Bernie called to say, there's one last seat left on the grid with Durango. I think I could get a deal sorted. I had some backing from my Indian sponsors. And, he said, there's one last seat. And at the same time, it just transpired that Red Bull were looking for drivers outside of Europe a little bit, I think. Danny Baja was actually the person I spoke to at Red Bull at the time. And, he agreed to, so I didn't get the full Red Bull backing from him, but he agreed to basically do the top up of the budget between what my Indian sponsors had and what the team needed. And somehow that deal all got put together totally last minute, and I jumped on a plane and went to Rickard. So yeah, without Red Bull, and then the following year, they backed me again. And actually, the end of 2007, I got my first F1 test, and I did their first simulation days when they were first building their simulator stuff. So it was a massive break. Without Red Bull, I'd be done. I would have been team manager of a Formula 3 team.
And a very good job you would have done of it too. But I'm glad that they intervened when they did. Tell us about the workings of Red Bull, because we see so many drivers come through the system and they always talk about it being ruthless and Helmut Marko being this taskmaster and all the rest of it. What was it like on the inside?
If I'm perfectly honest, I didn't do a good enough job of really developing that relationship with Helmut that I think other drivers did. I mean, I remember being on, and I won't mention names, but I remember being on flights back from races with other Red Bull drivers who was I was racing with in GP2. And we'd all be on that same EasyJet flight coming back into Luton. And I'd hear them across the aisle on the phone to Helmut after every race. And basically all they did was just complain nonstop about the team they were racing with and telling Helmut how the team was this, the team was this, the team was this. But I still managed to finish whatever, eighth or something. Whereas I was always the opposite. You know, I ingrained myself with the team that I was racing with, whether it was Durango or iSport or whoever. And my approach to life, in not just driving, but in anything I do, has always been to look at myself first and my errors and the problems that I could have overcome or I could have done better. And I did that as well in my conversation with Helmut. I was maybe in hindsight too quick to blame myself. And he just took it as, well, you're just the one making all the screw ups. And there are a couple of decisions in terms of choosing teams and stuff that, you know, he wanted me to do, but my gut told me to go elsewhere. And in the end, I think my decisions may have been correct. Politically, it didn't help me with Helmut in the long run. Those are lessons, life lessons you can only learn with age, right? I think there's a lot to be said about how you network yourself with key people in the paddock, in the sport, in life, in the world. I've never been somebody who's particularly good at that. I think, honestly, I look at people like Jason Plato, even outside of F1. I look at David Coulthard. Even in the broadcast world, you know, people like Crofty and yourself, you guys are naturally warm people that you go out there, you'll talk to anybody, you put yourselves out there, you build that network up. That comes naturally to you. My natural state of the pleasure I get, I should say, from life is to, I'm a bit geeky. I like spending time with engineers and mechanics and boffins. And, you know, I would, instead of networking with the right people in the F1 paddock, I would be spending time chatting with engineer friends of mine from other teams in the GP2 paddock about their drivers. And it's like,
you know, that in itself is lovely. And I tell you what, it's echoes of Charles Leclerc, you know, blaming himself very quickly. There is something very endearing about the way he does that when he makes a mistake. But as you say, you walk away remembering that he made the mistake, whether that was fair or not. And it's just an interesting one, isn't it? It's like if I said to you, how was your race today? And I hadn't seen it. And you went, well, actually, it was crap and I was terrible. That's what I would take away from that. And I probably, even if I didn't bother to then watch the race, all I remembered is that Caroon had a terrible race. Whether you did or not, you're probably being too hard on yourself.
Yeah, I think some of it comes from, you know, my natural competitive instinct is first against myself. You know, I'm very hard on myself to do better. And I think that's, when I look at the big picture, that's actually, in some ways, that's, you know, that's been a downside, actually.
Yeah, but then the flip side of that, and again, I won't name names, but there is one current driver who I know some people feel doesn't own the moment. And when he makes mistakes, he doesn't actually put his hand up. And that in itself can backfire on you because you're like, well, look, we all make mistakes. And actually people would have a lot more respect for you if you stood there and said, you know, my bad, I've got to totally own this moment and move on from it. So I don't think there's a straightforward answer, but
no. But I think there's something to be said about who you're talking to. You know, I think it's important to own the mistakes and stuff like that with you know your core team of engineers and people like that. But when it comes to the key decision makers in terms of your career progression, then it's important to balance that off with selling yourself.
Yeah,
and I think that's where I didn't do a good enough job. And I know, you know, other drivers were certainly better than me.
Thanks so much for listening to In The Pink. I hope you've enjoyed the podcast you've listened to so far. Please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe. Check out our Instagram page at in_the_pink. and you get all the details there about how you can win some of those Bose noise cancelling headphones. And join the community. We're all talking about the various guests that we've had on the podcast and who we'd like to see and hear in the next few weeks. So thank you for joining us. Stay with us. Stay healthy. Stay home. Stay connected with Bose.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.